why does life take all these twists and turns? Why does it do that? And why does it then, in the midst of those twists and turns, seem to tell a different story about God's disposition and God's attitude towards us? Why do we feel that? Why do we struggle with that? Well, what the Lord is doing for us today in this text is laying before you his ultimate intention towards you. And I love this text for that. His intention was to give you mercy. His intention was to give you lasting peace.
Indeed, it is a peace that surpasses understanding that we are looking at today in Genesis 43, verses 1 through 34. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We invite you to join us today as we're encouraged, understanding and knowing God's intention for us.
Now, the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again, buy us a little food." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, "You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you."' Israel said, 'Why do you treat me so badly, so as to tell the man that you had another brother?' They replied, 'The man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, "Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother?" What we told him was an answer to these questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?'" But Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me. We will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you and also our little ones. I will be a pledge for his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice." Then their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise, go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your brother Benjamin, your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved." So the men took this present, and they took double the money with them and Benjamin. They arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, "Bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." The man did as Joseph told him and brought the men to Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. And they said, "It is because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us to make us servants and seize our donkeys." So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke with him at the door of the house and said, "Oh, my lord, we came down the first time to buy food. And when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we brought it again with us. And we brought other money down with us to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks." He replied, "Peace to you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when they had given their donkeys fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon. For they heard that they should eat bread there. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with him and bowed down to him to the ground. And he inquired about their welfare and said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?" They said, "Your servant, our father, is well. He's still alive." And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son." Then Joseph hurried out For his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and controlling himself, he said, "Serve the food." They served him by himself, and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. And they drank and were merry with him. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. It is one of God's good purposes for his sheep in the course of their lives to awaken guilt, and have such a clear view of the human heart availed to us that we see it, that it begins to bring out within us an understanding of the need for mercy. Mercy. This is all over the Bible. We see this in Acts when in the early church the gospel was being preached, and the first thing they would say is, "Sirs, what must we do to be saved?" That was a desperation cry. That was a cry of utter desperation, understanding what their hearts were before this holy God. And the way that God does that, we've already considered this. You know this. We looked at this last week. We've done it already in the service. The way that God does that, the way that God produces that, is to publish his law to us. Not primarily as a way of directing our lives, though it becomes that, but first and foremost as a way of awakening guilt and godly sorrow that Corinthians says leads to repentance. That's what we saw last time. Isn't it remarkable that for 20 years, there was no turning to the Lord? That's how long Joseph now has been there. None. They didn't go to Dad and say, "Dad, you're not going to believe what we did." Nothing. 20 years, no confession. Their lives, in the course of it, had been ruthless. But God was working. And the deliverance we saw last time was not just seen in God giving them their food in physical famine and solving that problem for them. The deliverance was what we've always believed in Christianity and what we've understood in Christianity to be a deliverance from sin. And that was the scene last time. That's where it all began. Joseph did something and anticipated what would happen later to Israel when they were at the foot of the base there at Mount Sinai and the law would be published. And Joseph, in the midst of them, set before them a standard, and he used a little phrase that Paul picks up on, that the New Testament picks up on strongly, based on Moses' use of it, and it was, "Do this and live." Joseph said it plainly. It was the principle of the law, that they were to fulfill the terms of the law, and not with partial obedience. "Cursed is everyone who does not continue to do all things written in the book of the law to do them." All things. And so what he did was he said, "Do this and live." He did three things, remember. He accused them. He had charges against them. He spoke roughly to them. And then he gave that principle, "Do this and live." And he intended there a course of action in front of them to go do that would put them in a certain predicament that they could not get out of without acknowledging their guilt. That was the goal. He orchestrated the very scene of their betrayal of him and then recreated that scene, remember, as he bound one of the sons, left him in Egypt, sent them back with all the money. You see, that was the very thing they did when they sold Joseph. They took money. They sold him for silver. And what did they do here? To go get Simeon back, they would have to go come back and confess, "We've got silver. It's not ours." And with the first publishing of this, the first statement, "Do this and live," what did you see last time? They all started falling apart. they all started falling apart. The first word that's used to describe it was they said, "We are guilty concerning our brother. I told you not to do that." The whole scene was they're in utter distress. They are in despair. And that was the ultimate intention, to produce that in them. Joseph spoke roughly to them. He accused them. He tested them. And you know, this is why I think it's so important to understand that in the Gospels that Jesus is doing this very thing. He had come upon a whole generation of people who didn't see anything about themselves. And so these three things, this is exactly what you find him doing in the Gospels. He's speaking roughly, he is accusing, and he's testing. Those three things in the Gospels, over and over and over. And that's why if you struggle ever with Jesus being so radically different than the kind, nice Jesus of today, you're absolutely correct. He was rough in the Gospels with an intention. And that's what we have here. That's why I said last time, it's a poor sermon that doesn't make you either displeased with yourselves or with the preacher. I love that quote. The question is what is God's intention in doing all of this? What does God intend by doing all this to us? Why does God do this? Why does he show us this over and over and then do this in our own lives? Why do we struggle with the Lord's intention? And it's this question. It's this question that comes out today. In the whole big picture, is the Lord's intention to harm us or to bless us and help us? Why does life take all these twists and turns? Why does it do that? And why does it then, in the midst of those twists and turns, seem to tell a different story about God's disposition and God's attitude towards us? Why do we feel that? Why do we struggle with that? Well, what the Lord is doing for us today in this text is laying before you his ultimate intention towards you. And I love this text for that. When we come to the end of the story and Joseph says, listen, God meant all this for good. That's what he meant. His intention was to give you mercy. His intention was to give you lasting peace. I know that many of you in the course of your lives, many of you today, struggle with doubt. You struggle with guilt. And you have a lingering wonder in the back of your hearts and minds, is God really going to put up with me for the long haul? That is a real struggle for the Christian. Does he really have an intention for good? I mean that. Does he? And that is often the key source of discouragement in the Christian life. That's the key source of discouragement. And today, what he does is put on display his permanent intention, shows you the beginning and the end of this plan, that he had already planned good before they were ever even awakened to guilt. I want you to think about that. He had already planned good for them before they were ever even awakened to guilt. As we come to chapter 43, we come to about as dark a moment as we read, I think, in this whole narrative. It's full of suspense. It just grabs you. You don't want to leave it. In verse 1, we read that the famine was very severe in the land. Most of us have no idea of this. Maybe you get some idea with this water shortage right now in the Central Valley. I was watching the other day that many of these little towns out in the Central Valley, boys and girls, they don't have showers to go turn on right now. They've got to use buckets of water to clean. And that's going back how far now? How many years ago? And now they're trucking in water into these towns that have no water, like Fireball in these places. It's really interesting when you think about here, the text saying it's a severe famine. They had no trucks to truck in food. They had nothing. This is getting up in the morning, and I don't have enough to put on the plate. What's even more alarming as we open up chapter 43 is the state of the Holy Family. When Joseph was killed in Jacob's eyes, remember what he said, "I am going to my grave in sorrow." This is how he's been living for 20 years. Ever seen a miserable old man? The imagery is a family of complete brokenness in every way, shape, and form. In chapter 42, the opening scene was of Jacob sending his sons to Egypt. And remember how we looked at that and the sense of that was, go get down there and get some food, you lazy good-for-nothings. Just sitting around doing nothing. Kind of a good commentary on today's generation, by the way. The sons are back. Now one less son. I mean, this just keeps building, doesn't it? One less son. So, in Jacob's eyes now, one's been murdered terribly. One's now taken. And remember what the boys said on the way back. What is God doing to us? I think that's really important for this narrative. I gave a lot of thought to that this week, and I wasn't quite sure how to take that last week. But I do believe that since the guilt of their past had been awakened, they are thinking in their minds, this is all a result of what we did. This is a punishment from God for what we did. God's getting us. God's getting even. And as the famine gets more severe, Jacob now has come to a point where they're not going to make it if they don't go get food down in Egypt. If he doesn't send them back, they will die. So they have no other choice. So he says, go back to Egypt, almost as if he doesn't even want to deal with the real issues at hand. And immediately the sons respond, Judah responds, Dad, the man told us explicitly, we've got to come back with Benjamin, the youngest, the last son of Rachel. When Jacob hears this, he just breaks out. Why are you dealing so badly with me? Why are you doing this? Why did you even tell the man that we had another son? Why would you do that to your dad? Why would you put me through that? Can you feel this? Most of us accuse at this point, commentators accuse Jacob of idolatry. Maybe. I think it's more probable that Jacob, in all of his years of hardship, had thought a lot about the promise made to Abraham. That one day a son would come who would deliver and give him the land, and he sees none of it. He sees none of it, and everything about life is twisted and turned, and none of it looks like what God's promise was. And that now the chief son he thought would be the one through whom the promise would come, taken out in his eyes. And now they want to take Benjamin. He's my last hope for this. This is it. The same spirit of what is God doing is filling Jacob. It's filled him. It's filled the sons so that now he has no other choice. He is hemmed in on every side. He's got to let him go. He's been holding out. They should have gone right back, but he wouldn't. And so verse 14 really gets into the heart of Jacob when he says, may God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your older brother Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved. What do you hear in that? It's a hopeful cry for mercy. I hope it comes. I hope God will be merciful. If he takes my other son away, then he just does. I've already resonated. I'm going to the grave in sorrow. That's my life. Now, that's not the same response of Abraham, who, when his only son of promise was commanded to be put on the altar and God said, sacrifice him, Abraham said, I'm not going to doubt. If I did that, he'll raise him up. Quite a bit different, isn't it? Where is Jacob right now? Where Jacob is, where the sons are, can be summed up in verse 36 of the last chapter, which I view as a shot at God in some way. You've bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And now you would take Benjamin. Here it is. All this has come against me. Better said, everything is against me. Everything. That's where he is. And the question any good Bible reader asks at this point is everything against him? See, I think Paul has this on his mind in Romans 8 when he says, if God is for us, who can be against us? I think it's this. If everything's against you, you're a doomed man. That's the reality, isn't it? If everything in the world is against you, including God, you're over. I mean, you're toast. But if God's for you and everything else is against you, then you're the most blessed man on the face of the earth. But here we run up against this problem that this is how many Christians live. Miserably. Miserably. What is the single great struggle of the Christian life? Really? Honestly. What is it? We struggle with the accusations, the rough speech, the law exposing the heart, and the very thing that Joseph did to his brothers, you struggle with guilt. Who awoke that, by the way? The world's not really awakened to that. Who awoke that? God awoke that. So now you have this sensitive conscience that he has been working on, that he has penetrated, that he's opened up. And now you have really sensitive hearts as believers. And we go through and we start to wonder. You have this looming fear that then awakens over your heads. And the looming fear is this. Is God's intention to us really good? That's the heart of this text. That's the question of this text. Is God's intention to us really good? What is he going to do to us because of this terrible ongoing problem of sin, which we all struggle with and now we're all sensitive to, and sanctification means I see it all the more. I hate it. I give into it. What does that now mean? And what will God take from me? What will God do to me? What's God going to put me through? You ever feel this? I think it's much more real than we talk about. Is he going to take out a loved one? God going to pull the chair out from under me and let me fall? Is God really for us? Do you ever ask that? That's a fair question. And then we struggle often with severe doubt. Am I the greatest hypocrite ever to live on the face of the earth? Is that possible? Am I really a Christian? Could I be wrong? When the disciples were struggling with Jesus' statement, you know, one of you is going to betray me, what's the first thing that came out of their mouths? Is it me? Is it I? Sometimes I think we live wondering if God is just out there to make life hard. And that's why I asked the question last time, what do you think you've known more of in the course of your life, blessing or hardship? Oh, come on. You know it's blessing. If you were to tally it up, you know your life's been full of it.
It is interesting that we tend to focus on the trials rather than the blessings, but indeed the blessings are abundant in our lives, as we're learning here today. If you have a praise report, we would love to hear from you. They always mean a great deal to us. It lets us know that the program is, in fact, having a positive effect on your life as you seek to live it out to the glory of God in the grace of Christ. Here's how you reach out to us. As always, our web address, agradio.org. Other formats are available. The jumping off points there for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, again, agradio.org. Or give us a call, 888-504-8805. If you're writing to us, the address is Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. And then, if you have a question or a praise report, we would encourage you to pull out your smartphone, access the Voice Memo app, leave your name and where you're calling from, your praise report or your question, and then email that audio to us at questions@agradio.org. And we'll do our best to have Chris answer any question you have, or we'll at least be encouraged by your praise reports. That always means a great deal to us. But again, get out that Voice Memo app. Send us a question or a praise report to questions@agradio.org. Well, let's return to Pastor Chris once again and close our time out together today with a look forward to tomorrow's broadcast.
We go through terrible things in life, and life takes a lot of twists and turns, and we wonder what God's going to do to us. Is his intention good or is it evil? Is God for us or is God against us? If God is for us and everything else is against us, then you have everything going for you. His purposes are going to be worked out no matter what the current station, no matter what the current circumstance in life looks like.
That's tomorrow here on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.